Do you ever feel like you ought to be getting more done at work? Well, maybe it's not you. New data gathering tools are helping employers pinpoint where all the time goes. Turns out responding to email and attending meetings are two chief culprits.
What's more, a lot of those emails or meetings requests seem to come from just a handful of people in an organization. And once those people are identified, they can start dialing it down, hopefully, so people who work with them can get more done.
Sue Schellenbarger joins us now. She writes the Work and Family column at the Wall Street Journal. Sue, welcome back to the show.
It's great to be with you.
Well, there's a common feeling at work that maybe we should be getting more done, maybe a sense that it could be the email, could be the meetings, but you're writing about new tools that actually help us figure out where those culprits are.
There are new data gathering tools that are for the first time applying algorithms to employees' email headers and subject lines to figure out who's communicating with who. They're also looking at online calendars, such as Outlook, who's scheduling meetings with whom, who's attending. And it's not an invasion of privacy. The data about personal activities is stripped out before it's given to the employer. But what it does do is help identify groups that are meeting more than others, groups that are spending way too many time in meetings, too much time in meetings. And on a confidential level, individual employees can get reports on their own time use and find out how they compare to their colleagues in terms of calling meetings, sending emails, and burdening others with all of those extra work.
In terms of the people that you looked at, some companies have done some of these studies and you wrote about them. What did you find about just how much time burden can be placed on people because of these emails and meetings?
It can be huge. Volumetrics is the data analysis company that was hired by Seagate, and Boeing has a pilot going, and some others. And at some companies, there are a small handful of people who are really off the charts. They consume more than 400 hours a week of colleagues' time, not at those two companies, but in general. And if that's the equivalent of 10 people working full-time every week just to read one manager's email and attend that manager's meeting, there are habits that managers fall into of inviting a lot of people to meetings so they don't offend anyone, or hitting reply all, or sending out a lot of batch emails, or answering emails that don't need to be answered. All of these are habits maybe started for sort of good reasons, but they wind up being a time sink for large groups.
And maybe the people doing that sort of thing are thinking about how important they are as they convene these important meetings and send out, get everybody on board in these big emails.
Well, you put your finger right on it. It's that they take their eye off the ball. In those cases, it's ego or some kind of idea about being polite or not offending people that's operating when they're really not thinking that time is money inside the corporation. And at first, some of these executives are kind of like proud of, you know, how grueling their lives are, but after they realize they're maybe costing hundreds of thousands of dollars over the course of a year, they're willing to change their ways.
So what is just a few of these super senders, just to look at email now? What are some of the cardinal mistakes people make when they do send out massive volumes of email?
Sometimes everybody doesn't need to see that email. It turns it into a spectator sport. Seagate, which is a company that's used the volumetrics technology, so that, you know, we really don't need spectators on email. Just send it to the people who absolutely need to know. And avoid reply all like the plague. Unless you've got a reply all that really is going to change the lives of the people who receive that email, don't hit reply all just to clue them in or just say, yay, I'll be there. You bet. You know, you don't need those. We sometimes get hundreds of them, even inside our own newsroom. Big subject lines can cause people to, you know, read emails they don't need to read. Just basically unclear email that forces people to read without really understanding the point.
And how about, is there a problem of trying to accomplish too much within an email, too many different, separate, coherent points?
And really, few people will read beyond one or two paragraphs. Some people also fall into the trap of trying to work out disagreements on email. If you've ever tried to do that, it's the worst way. You can take a simple little spat and extend it into World War III over, you know, several dozen emails going back and forth, getting angrier and angrier. And another confusing point is people have big egos. They think, oh, I've got all this email. I'm so overloaded. Another sort of sign of corporate machismo that really ought to be a thing of the past by now.
Well, we're talking right now with Sue Schellenbarger. She writes the Work and Family column for the Wall Street Journal. We're talking about why emails and meetings can sink our productivity at work and what to do about it. We're talking with Sue Schellenberger. She writes the Work and Family column for the Wall Street Journal. We're talking about why email and meetings can really drain our productivity at work.
Yeah, new measurement techniques show that email meetings we don't need to be at can absorb a lot of our time. And we want to hear from you now at 800-642-1234. Do you feel like your workday slips away without getting much done because you're having to deal with this email from that boss, go to the meeting called by that other boss that you didn't need to be at in the first place? Or maybe you a culprit. You send out too many emails, copy too many people, take up their valuable time, call meetings that nobody wanted to go to anyway. Share your stories. 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And we'll take our first caller now. We have Rich with us from Genoa City. Hi, Rich.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just thought I would relay one of the reasons why I retired from teaching. One of the annoyances, I should say. It's not the reason, but I'm an old guy, obviously, if I retired, but we would get so many emails, and the teachers still complain about it. We get so many emails from parents that want to micromanage their kids, and I'm all for parental involvement, but when they ask for a detailed explanation, very often, very frequently, and, you know, the teacher gets 30 emails in a day, replying to 30 emails in an intelligent, coherent way. So it sounds like you know something that you do know, but you just have to write it all. That really is a time drainer. And there's these other things we have to do as teachers. What do they call it? Teaching and grading and dealing with students.
Not so much the email all the time. Well, thank you, Rich. Appreciate that. And, you know, email does make it easy, maybe sometimes too easy to communicate with people. Do we over-rely on email in general, do you think, Sue?
We do. I think it's a blessing and a curse. Many of us know we can work much faster via email, but it does give access really horizontally across the company and outside the company to many, many more people, and it's really easy to fall into a habit of over-communicating on email. You feel kind of like you're working, but if you really were to analyze the email, is that necessary for my work, my job goals, my job description? A lot of times it's not. And poor Rich, I mean, he's a classic example of where your efforts just get splintered until you spend half your day on email and you haven't even started your real job. That was the case for some of the employees studied in some of the companies I looked at, where almost half their work week was gone and emails they didn't have to answer, meetings they shouldn't have been in.
Now, as a teacher, you feel kind of obliged to reply to the parent, but within a workplace, are we starting to move out of the mentality that all emails deserve a reply and are entitled to a reply?
You know, that's a really good question. Bain and Company, which did some studies in conjunction with the Volumetrics data gathering, has been training people. You don't have to reply to every email. You know, you just don't reply. And if your colleague objects or says there are hurt feelings, just say, you know, I'm really saving you time. That's another email you don't have to answer. It can be a cultural change. I've been trying to do this myself by curbing the impulse to just shoot back a thank you or a wow, I really appreciate knowing that. Just, you know, try not to expect a reply and you can streamline your day.
Well, we'll go back to our phone lines now. Rick is joining us from Baraboo. Hi, Rick.
Hey, how are you?
Good, thanks.
I just was going to relay a story. I work for a company that has roughly 68,000 people in it. And somehow one morning sent an email out to a very large group. We're not even sure how it could happen, but they did. And then in turn, I mean, we have employees in all a lot of different countries. And then everyone began replying and asking why they received that email and sending it and replying to all. And then other people began replying to those people asking why they replied to all. It went on for 3 hours one morning, and it was pretty hilarious.
Was it kind of fun, or was it just a drag?
No, it was fun because I did not reply to any of them. I just sat and watched it, you know, go back and forth, but it was just kind of hilarious. People don't really understand, you know, the whole story and the whole... It was funny.
Right. Well, thanks a lot.
That and people that reply and say thank you.
Right. Yeah.
It's real polite and everything, but there's just one more email for me to have to delete.
All right. They're being polite, and we talked about being polite being one of the last things maybe we need to let go of when it comes to email. So, Sue, with something like that, 68,000 people in Rick's company.
Great...
I can't imagine what his inbox must have looked like. You can just
see
him hitting delete over and over.
You know, we communicate for a living at the Wall Street Journal, and we do the same things. There was one long string where people really were really getting enraged because we work on email a lot, and the endless reply alls, and finally the most famous one was, you know, will you stop hitting reply all? And this person hit reply all. So, you know, it's like it's really like a virus. You just can't stop. Great story from Rick.
Thanks, Rick, for that call at 800-642-1234. That's the kind of thing that could bring a server to its knees and drive IT people crazy. Back to our callers now. We've got Tim on the line in Green Bay. Tim, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Do you have an email story or a meeting story?
I'm a teacher, and some of the other educators are calling in and saying to reply. A lot of these emails are very long. Number one, you never find out what they want because it's buried somewhere in, you know, three paragraphs. And this goes for anybody writing an email. What do you need? What is this email about, and why does it apply to you? If they put that up front, a lot of times you can tell, I need to reply to this right away or not at all. The other thing is, and with parents and coworkers, model brevity. They might send you a page to read. And again, it's buried somewhere in there as to what they want you to do. I always model that back by saying, tell me what you want me to do about this, and I will do it. Or with parents, better to have a phone call or come on in. But again, model brevity in your emails. You should be able to put out an email in, I would say, a paragraph or less if there's some action to be taken on it, rather than to go on and give them every bit of information that maybe they don't have to know, or maybe they didn't even know one part of it. So model brevity in writing them.
Okay, so some good tools there, Tim, saying be the emailer you want to see in the world, and hopefully other people will follow suit. Does that work, Sue?
That's a very good, very, very good suggestion, and I think it does. I know it works for me. I am writing shorter emails because more of the people I write to are writing shorter emails. I don't expect an answer because more people I write to don't answer me. I think there's a lot to be done. Some people are incorrigible, however, and, you know, maybe they need training. In one case in my story, I interviewed a woman who coached a guy who just wrote these endless emails answering questions that, you know, nobody wanted answered, and she forced him to start writing only very brief answers to emails, and he was astonished when nobody asked for more information. So you really have to retrain people one by one, and I think hopefully that will happen as younger generations, you know, become more numerous in the workplace.
Tim, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. We spent a lot of time on the email side of thing. A little more on meetings, Sue. How do we make meetings more efficient, make sure they only involve the people who actually need to be there?
Boy, these are really problematic. People have gotten into the habit of asking more people rather than fewer to avoid offending anyone for being left out. And you see so many meetings where half the heads are dropped looking into the smartphones, or, you know, working on a tablet while they're in the meeting, which is a dead giveaway that they don't need to be there. I think two things have to happen. Meetings have to be smaller. Bain & Company recommends 7 or fewer people in a meeting for optimal productivity. And second, you don't have to stay for the whole meeting. You know, maybe issue agendas that have just part of a team there when needed, so you're not sitting and listening to stuff you don't need to know. Meetings are a really dangerous time sink. I think most executives agree on this, and there's a lot to be done yet in this area.
Great. Well, let's go back to our callers now. Jan is with us now in Milwaukee. Hi, Jan.
Hi. We do haikus. Those are our emails. Our rule is if you can't say it in a haiku, you can't say it.
So 575 syllables there. Does that really work?
It does.
Wow.
It forces you to be real, not just brief, but pithy.
Can you read us one?
And everybody laughs. I mean, that's the thing. You have to really think before you press send.
Is there one that you can think of?
Oh, not offhand, but I will write after I hang up.
Okay, let us know. Maybe we'll give it a read on the air if it's interesting. Well, Jan, thanks a lot for that haikus. That's really taking it to a new level, Sue.
That would certainly slow a lot of people down, the non-poetic ones in the group, wouldn't it? They wouldn't write at all.
We've got to impose that here. I'll call a meeting. Eric, next in Milwaukee. Hi, Eric.
Hello, yes. My name is Eric. I'm from Milwaukee. Thank you for taking my call. My case is essentially being part of an email conversation or project initiation, and you essentially realize, you know, in the middle of the project that you are obviously not needed in the specific project or conversation, but you are included on every single email for the life of that project. Two, 3 years and all.
That's a classic problem. And, you know, why does that happen? I think people create these batch address groups and don't edit them. You know, that's one of the things that the trainers at Bain were saying, you know, just don't use those. You know, take the extra time to, you know, the extra 30 seconds to take out the names you don't need, and you'll save hours, countless hours upon hours of all those other people reading or maybe even attending the meetings.
Time for one more quick call. Krista joins us next in Wausau. Hi, Krista.
Hello. I just like to share with you that I'm trying to start a new trend. I usually, in my subject line, if I want to write a short answer, I just write NNTO, which stands for no need to open. Yeah. And then I'll just write thanks or 6 p.m. or some short answer that they don't have to open the entire email to get my message. And that just saves them a little bit of time.
Cool. Well, you just invented a new code. I do that sometimes too, but then probably people click to see if there's more. But if I had the NNTO, people would not do that. That's very good.
Yeah, what are you trying to hide in that email, Veronica?
You'll never know.
Well, in effect, it's using the subject line like texting, but in your email.
Right.
Exactly. Very smart.
So, Sue, are we moving in a better direction based on some of this new research? Are we going to fix some of these problems?
Boy, it's varying company by company. This is a place, I think, where employers are truly all over the map. You can find some that are just as efficient as, and they run so smoothly on company wikis with project management tools where, you know, everybody works together collaboratively. And you've got the others that are still in fiefdoms where the emails and the meetings grind on and on. We're all over the map. I do think that progress is happening, though. I think people are much more mindful of the waste than they were in the past.
Well, interesting stuff. We'll see if we see some change in Wisconsin businesses, maybe here at WPR, too. Mm. Rob, I'm not pointing fingers, but Rob. Sue, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you.
Sue Schellenberger writes the Work and Family column for the Wall Street Journal.